One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Hey guys, before this show starts, just want to let you know that over on Red Men Plus, our subscription service, we've got tons and tons of Liverpool content in podcast form as well. You love podcasts, we love making podcasts. Go and check it all out. That's redmenplus.com. Sign up for as little as £5 a month. You will not regret it. Now, enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone. It is time for another Red Men podcast. I am Paul Machen. I'm joined by Steve Hall. And this week, we've got Nicky Alton, finally. I think it's taken me about 10 years to finally get you in on a podcast.
The reason being is that I just think that younger people should be commenting on the team today. And, you know, I've sort of had my day. I love writing the shows and I love writing stuff. But I'd rather be behind stuff and not really front of stuff. I just think it's time for... to hear a young person's point of view.
Well, you say that, but have you been on Twitter lately? Young people, a lot of the young people on Twitter have got nothing but shite to say. So we'll play the role of middle ground for now and see how we get on with it. Nicky has got a brand new play. Well, an updated version of it, of a play on at the Royal Court. We're going to be talking about that a little bit later on. I had such a good time with that last time around, so I'm quite excited to talk about it. We have got a kick-off question before we get into everything, though, and it comes from Richard G, who's one of our Club Legends subscribers. He says, Trent has won all there is to win. He's even got a Premier League Club World Cup, two trophies that Stevie never got. Could Trent start being classed as the greatest Scouser to play for Liverpool? Or if not, how many more trophies and which ones does he need to earn?
That's a big question.
It is, isn't
for
it?
For a Tuesday morning.
Yeah. I mean,
he can't be the greatest, though. I mean, look at people like Phil Thompson.
Yeah.
He won, like, European Cups and, like, about 10 leagues or something, I don't know, whatever.
But this, I was going to say, if it's not based on trophies, because it just can't be, because... Phil Thompson pretty much won more than Stevie, but a lot of people, especially again,
definitely won more than Stevie.
Well, sorry, yeah. But then our generation, and again, it'd be different. But like, we'll still see Stephen as the best. So it's like, to say which trophies does he need to win is kind of irrelevant. It's more, if Trent sustains his level for like another 10 years. Then he's in the conversation. Well, it's going to be hard to get past Steven Gerrard.
Who are the ultimate Scousers to play for Liverpool then? So, like, obviously Steven Gerrard, and we've mentioned Phil Thompson.
Tommy Smith. The 60s side had quite a few of them, and then going forward to the 70s side. Chris Lawler. No, I'm thinking of people who've won a lot of stuff. That's Phil Neal, but he's not a Scouser.
Terry McTermott.
Cally.
Jimmy Case. I'd have him as the greatest.
See, what you're getting across this is you're getting a broad spectrum of, in Gerrard, you've got the undisputed talent. I think they're probably the most talented, certainly the most talented Scouser, I think, ever to play.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Then when you come to, like, obviously the most appearances is Ian Callaghan by an absolute mile.
And Carragher's close.
Yeah, you've got Carragher. Carragher's a couple hundred behind, isn't he? But, you know, to that point...
No, he's about 100 behind, isn't he?
Is he really? Okay, yeah. Well, there you go. You've then got... Obviously, Phil Thompson's got the trophies and the medals to lay out and all that. Mm. But I think it's an interesting question because Trent's got the potential. He's got the potential to get the appearances.
Yeah,
he's got the talent, mm-hmm. without a doubt. He's certainly the most talented Scouser since Steven Gerrard.
Yeah.
In terms of what he can do, and he's already started to amass silverware. If he adds a few more trophies on top of that, and then he goes, you know, he could potentially do another 10 years at Liverpool. Have 800, you know, 600, 700 appearances for the football club, have a handful of Premier Leagues, European Cups and whatever under his belt.
I think sometimes, you know, when it'll go against the grain of what a lot of people think, because he's already doing brilliantly where he is in his position. But I just think he should be in Steven Gerrard's position. Yeah. I think he should be in a centre midfield. People are moaning about a midfield player now. I think if he stuck Trent there, he can tackle, head, cross, and it's a bit like Steven Gerrard. Steven Gerrard often ended up in the right back position crossing the ball.
Well, it's an interesting point because obviously Pep Landers loves Trent, and he always goes on about how he had him as the DM in his like development side, and he's reinvented the right back position. Mm-hmm. You know, there's no one else who can quite play it like him. Mm-hmm. But we're always going to have that because I think how we all recognise what footballers look like. Mm. He looks like a midfielder. He plays like a midfielder. A lot of his positioning is central at times for the club, and maybe we'd recognise it more. Maybe there's just because you still have the problem with him playing right back, and this is the one thing that will hamper him. Is I still hear people going, "He can't defend," which is nonsense, by the way, because he can defend.
He's too busy attacking.
Well, exactly. The system literally requires him to be down the other end of the pitch. Mm. If he had another half a yard of pace, you know, if he had Kyle Walker's pace, you'd be told no one would have any doubt over everything he had because he'd be able to bail himself out of trouble a bit more. Mm. But the fact that he doesn't have that means he has to work a little bit harder. But yeah, if he played centre mid, I don't think no one would have anything left to criticise him for. No. So
he's going to, when he finishes, he's going to be like, if you pick an all-time Liverpool 11, he's probably in it now, to be honest. I don't know who else, he probably is, but he's definitely going to be in the top five Scousers, top three. Like, Gerrard, for my era, Fowler is definitely, Fowler's unbelievable. Mm, yeah. There's so many of them, but, and again, right back, it's not a very sexy position. Mm-hmm. Being the goal scorer.
Well, Jamie Carragher did no one any no fullbacks any favours by basically saying they were all failed
wingers.
No one wants to be Gary Neville.
It's like, yes, Gerrard was the action in the middle of the park, and then the goal scorers or the big centre halves lifting the European cups. Like, there's a chance Trent becomes Liverpool captain. In fact, I'd be shocked if he doesn't.
Yeah.
At one stage, he'll be Liverpool captain as well, and then that'll add to his argument more.
If I say something to you both there, because it's quite interesting, because I will probably forget this. Is when we were writing the stadium tour, me and Dave Kirby, we had to ask each individual player what their hopes for the future and what their ambitions were. And Trent was very, very young then. He must have been 17, just breaking into the team, whatever he was. And I remember him very coldly and coolly saying, "I want to be the captain of Liverpool Football Club." And he said it so coolly and quietly because he wasn't speaking much. He was quite shy then. And we were like, "He means that."
Yeah, that's true. I remember a great story about Gerrard, and whether this is true, this is just one of those like sort of teenage folklore thing that gets passed around school, was how he was going out with Jennifer Allison, and apparently they broke up because she wanted to go out and he wanted to be Liverpool captain. You know what I mean? It was like, so that was like the I love
what
those.
I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to say he slide tackled in a nightclub.
Yeah, he just got a little bit. But yeah, like the Trent thing, we're in a weird position now where it's like people don't want him to be that good. And of course, it's because every football club, because there's that many English right backs now, every half decent football club's got a half decent right back. So you're trying to find ways to claw the other ones down instead of celebrating them. And it's the assisting. A few more goals a season, I think, I'll add to his lustre a little bit, because you can't deny goals, whereas you can deny assists because of, you know, you're having people trying to like denigrate getting double figures assists every season, and it's like, oh well, like volume merchants, and oh, he just does it in the Liverpool system, says blah 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 blah. You're like, it's astonishing what he's been able to achieve as a footballer so far.
And what your problem you've got as well today is fullbacks have got to be so much more in today's modern game. Mm. It's like the kid who he just sold to Notts Forest.
Yeah, Nico.
I thought he was going to be a great player, but what he had to do more than just be a right back. Now, I thought if you left him, it's just right back. He had pace, he was solid in the tackle, and if he was just like an old-style right back, you go, we've got a kid here for the next 10 years. Yeah. But he wasn't expected to be a winger and all kinds. Yeah. And you're going to get caught out.
No, it's absolutely true. So it is a fascinating one. It makes you wonder, because we're going to talk about the midfield, because it's like the only remaining talking point about Liverpool. You know, Liverpool are that good that we have to find something to have a problem with.
Don't these people on social media have to find a problem, though?
Don't we just? Yeah, there's always got to be something. I mean, people, I would contend, and I've long contended, that everyone needs to have a little bit of misery in their life, because it's like a common unifier. It's something you can talk to about anyone.
Misery loves company, doesn't it?
It does, it's true. Yeah, we said this about, you know, think about how many crap jobs you've done over the years. And I used to work in like shops, and you'd be stood around doing fuck all day. Okay. And so you needed something to talk about, this like a strange bunch of people you've got nothing in common with. You've got to find something to do, so you bitch about your boss, or you bitch about the customers, or you complain about like some function of your job or whatever. That's the thing that unifies staff together in that thing, and I think people have that in life.
Do you know if I say to you there, and the reason I sort of don't go along with that, and you're totally right, that is what people do, is everyone's got misery coming to them, because people are going to lose parents, they're going to have sicknesses in the family, they're going to have sicknesses themselves, so misery's going to come to you. So you know what? Don't bring it on. Yeah. So don't talk about it. Maybe I'm too optimistic and too positive, but I mean, like this year, December, lost my dad, my mum's had a stroke and stuff like that. They're old. It happens, and everybody is going to get misery. You can't avoid it. We all avoid it. As human beings, we pretend it's not going to happen to me.
Yeah.
We're all going to die. We're all going to get old. You were talking about it when I come in.
Yeah.
But the point of it is, when Liverpool Football Club are doing so well,
yeah,
I don't understand these people who are moaning, like when we drew with Fulham. Know all the greatest Liverpool sides. If you go back in the history of them, a lot of them had off days first game of the season. There was little draws, there was defeats. And then you picked up as the season went. But people today have got no patience for it.
Yeah, well, there you go. You heard it first from Nicky Holt. We're all going to die.
There you go.
So just enjoy Liverpool.
Yeah, cheer.
Just party, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Right, Sal, we're going to be talking about the Fulham game because Liverpool were crap, but we're going to go through it and see if we can piece some bits together, post that. And then we're going to be moving on to talk about You'll Never Walk Alone. We're going to be talking about the midfield. And we'll have a little bit, if we've got time, we've got a few minutes to laugh at Manchester United, which always adds to our mood. Right, it's a very short break from us and we will return. Tell her.
Red Men Plus is here and we're ready to be your partners in what will be an unbelievable journey following Jürgen's mighty Reds.
Hendo 10 Years a Red, a three-part podcast series looking back at the amazing career of Liverpool captain Jordan Henderson, featuring the likes of Jürgen Klopp.
He's brilliant in small spaces. He's absolutely brilliant footballer. So that's, yeah, why we play him in such decisive positions like six and other things.
Steven Gerrard.
Look, I think when you sign for Liverpool and you come out of your city, i.e. Sunderland, at such a young age, you're going to have your moments and you're going to have times where you need some support and it's not really working out.
Sir Kenny Dalglish.
For me to present it to Jordan was a huge honour for me. To give a special trophy to a special guy, that a special football club is, it doesn't get much better, does it?
Jamie Carragher.
What you noticed straight away was sort of the personality, the character of the player as well, was pretty good and pretty special. So you knew he'd have half a chance because of that.
And Trent Alexander-Arnold.
When I first went and trained with him, like, he blew me away how good he was technically. And that, I was kind of like, whoa, I didn't realise he could play like that or he could do that.
Hendo, 10 Years a Red. The amazing three-part podcast series, available now on Red Men Plus.
Yes, welcome back. It is a brand new season. It hasn't quite started as we all dreamt, but we've got you covered from all angles over on Red Men Plus. Do head over there. Right, we drew 2-2 with Fulham a week after beating Manchester City in the big 50p. There's no escaping it, Nicky. Liverpool were crap at the weekend, The game was a bit. The game was poor. It wasn't what we expected. The thing that the note of encouragement on all this, I think, if your football team's bad, or you think your football team's bad, but then it doesn't seem to be backed up, you know, like maybe the manager doesn't recognise it. I think the fact that Jürgen Klopp just come out and was just like, yeah, they'll do rubbish. It's doesn't change it, but it actually gives you that sense of confidence that we should all have because we know Liverpool's manager knows what he's doing. But it is refreshing sometimes where he does just come out and you go, whew, okay, well, at least they obviously recognise that as a situation as opposed to like, oh, no, you see a lot of managers go, oh, no, look at the positive here and the positive here and the positive there. He had no time for the positives he was focusing on. It was a bit shit.
I seen, what's her name? It's Graeme Souness basically sum it up quite right yesterday. He sort of said it, and it's always true in any football game. It's still 11-on-11, no matter who you've bought and who you've got. And Liverpool started the game slowly and poorly. Fulham started like it was the FA Cup final, like it was the Champions League final. The minute you don't step into that level, it's very hard to drag it back in. When a team's 15, 20 minutes in and you're looking around going, God, these are not giving us a minute on the ball. It's very hard to turn your game around and go, right, we better get like them.
Yeah.
You've got to start like them. And I think Liverpool in the last, like, what, since Klopp's been there, have always started that way. So when people start to moan about it, I don't get it because maybe it comes with longevity or being a long-time fan or a fan of maybe 10 years or whatever, that you watch games and when you're playing poorly, you think, we're a brilliant team, we're going to win all kinds, we're winning all kinds. just take it easy. It's going to be okay.
Yeah, and I guess the only thing that kind of come of it, which Gergen does himself no favours, the dry pitch stuff. Like, it's honestly, I wonder whether he does it half as a joke sometimes. Because, and don't get me wrong, I'm not sure he did, but it's a bit of a joke. I know it's a bit of a joke amongst the players. I mentioned this on a show this week, how we played Pro Evo with Divock, Karius and Joe Gomez a few years back. And when Karius actually brought the keeper out and the ball stuck and he got lobbed, which was hilarious. We didn't know. Little did we know his career would pan out from there. But they all laughed about the dry pitch. They went, all the pitch was too dry. And so it's clearly a topic of conversation behind the scenes at Liverpool. But it goes to, it, for me, it does himself no favours when he mentions things like that, because it's just a second he said it, I was like, nothing he says either side of this is going to matter to all those horrible banter accounts and all the other people who are looking for something to pick up. Yeah, and that's what you had like, it just like dry, it was literally like he came out and like slammed his hand down and went, that dry pitch, that dry pitch is the reason why Liverpool crap today. I mean, he never, it was a almost comma in a wider sentence.
If you watch the whole interview, I think it's like 4 minutes, and in every part of it, he was like, we were crap, paraphrasing, we were rubbish. The best thing is we drew because we were rubbish and we should have lost. And then then that pitch, it just comes out. And I don't know if it's calculated. He's either really clever, or sometimes he's like a really honest guy and he just talks what's on his mind, and he's not, I don't know, like, the media trained part of it would just go, yeah, we were rubbish, we'll try again, we'll regroup, we'll go back and we'll try again. But Jürgen, he doesn't really do that, because I think he's very clever with the media, and that he tries to be as honest as he can and get up by keeping people on board as well. And I think sometimes it just slips out. He's probably thinking that, like, that, but that's going to happen at every single ground. It used to be worse, like, you know, teams would, you know, turn eating off in the changing room, so you'd be caught, you know, like, that just happens when you go away from home, tough shit, get on with it.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's really clever in that he thinks, rather than everyone going on for 9 days until we play Palace, what's how crap Liverpool are, if they're just all talking about me in this dry pitch, the players aren't getting it as much. You mean, because like, there's only so much ridicule that people can spread around. And if it's, well, are they going to get on Trent's back for the defending? Are they going to get on Fabinho's back, or Henderson's back, or Bobby's back, or whatever? Or do I just throw this dry pitch thing out and get it get it on me? Or the flip side is, it's not that clever at all, and he's just saying what he thinks.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those things. I think it's a bit like it creeps into people's talk. And you get it with footballers a lot, where, or you get it with politicians, where you've been briefed enough and key words then slip out when you're then talking, because things have been said and been said and been said. I think in the Liverpool changing room, they'll have gone, okay, it's like you work in a restaurant, and when your restaurant's empty on a night, you go, why is it empty? So you go, oh, is there an event on in town? Or what's the weather like? Or you know, is it when's payday? How long is it till payday? So you come up with a bunch of quick reasons why it might have not worked for you. And the Zai pitch, I just think, is one of them. And the problem is, of course, he either recognises it or he doesn't. And if he doesn't recognise it, then he doesn't care that he's saying it out loud, whereas it becomes a little bit of a point of ridicule, because it's that old logic of, it's a dry pitch for both teams. But it's such a nothing thing. I think, Nick, it just goes to show Jürgen Klopp's massive and Liverpool are massive. The idea that Jürgen Klopp's saying something that is nothing could end up being reported in such a huge way kind of gives you the sense of just how big he is and everything he does is.
If I had a name as big as him, kind of thinking the job I'm in, I'd like be banned off TV and I wouldn't get no work and stuff, because I say stuff and virtually every few sentences I say. I think with him, I think it's an honesty thing. I think he struggles really to be deceivious, knowing he's in a, you know, to show any deceit in an interview. You can see that. So I think things just slip in.
I think he is. I think that he doesn't try and play the game.
No.
Perhaps, I don't think he, I was saying there's two sides.
I think he has to be told to play it sometimes. So last Christmas we went, COVID, I'll tell you anything you want to know, I'll tell you who's got COVID. And then someone went, stop telling people who've got COVID, because it means they can't play. Yeah. And he went, yeah, okay. And within a week, his tune totally changed on that.
When he told everyone, you know, everyone fly to Basel and come and have a big party. And then the next press conference, he walks in and sits down and goes, before I start, if you haven't got it, don't fly to Basel. He doesn't care. And we've been in press conference, we've seen how he interacts with the PR people and stuff, and he just doesn't give a fuck, basically. He's an honest man, and if you ask him a question, and you spoke to him, and he won't bullshit you.
No.
He won't do the, you know, we're just trying to get better, we're just training every day, and we're, you know, one game. He is just literally, he'll tell you anything you want to know because he's so comfortable in his own skin. He doesn't need to fool you. Because I've always said this, I thought Brendan Rodgers, for example, needed to, he was almost out of curry favour with Liverpool fans. Yeah. Like, I don't think he felt comfortable, his demeanour or his stature of being the Liverpool manager, it was almost like he was acting up.
Imposter syndrome.
A little bit. Jürgen could leave Liverpool tomorrow and he'd have a new job. And it would probably, you know, Real Madrid would sack their managers again, or you know, he'd walk in, he'd be the next time, he would be. Not a lot of people can get that really, and I'm not saying Jürgen's bigger than Liverpool because he's not. But what I'm saying is, he's worthy, so he doesn't have to try and prove himself. Why do you have to lie? Why do you have to the Jose Mourinho thing of getting the world against me and all? You know, if I prefer not to speak, all that kind of stuff. Jürgen will just tell you what he thinks.
Yeah. Do you know what's on there as well? A lot of that's in as people, don't want to get deep again, but now as we evolve, people can see when you're a phony now. Really can quickly. Years ago, loads of managers were playing mind games. Mourinho still does it, and it's like, he's even outdated.
It's boring, isn't it?
It's boring, yeah. And years ago, your Don Revy's, your Bill Shankly's, all these people, they were all playing mind games with wet pitches. This is going to happen. This player's not fit. It was all going on. I think today, if you're doing that, and it still goes on, people can see right through it.
Yeah, Solskjaer was trying it last year and everyone's going, mate, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
What are you doing, you idiot? Yeah. I remember seeing it was one of the reality shows, I think it was a short-lived one, I feel like it was on MTV, I can't remember what it was. It was either 50 Cent one or a Puff Daddy one or whatever, but there's a guy and he's going, I'm playing mind games, and getting in your head, and they're going, it's not mind games if you're telling us you're playing mind games, mate. You can't tell someone you're playing mind games. That's basically what like these guys are like. These days. And I don't think you're right. I don't think you're good.
If I just give you a quick one as well, sorry to interrupt you. There's no Brendan Rodgers. I wrote Celtic show for them up there, and I met him a few times, and he was a really sound fella, really nice fella. But it was like he wasn't that person you seen in front of the camera. Even he's. You become a little bit risk averse to what you're going to say and to getting stick and to getting leathered off people.
Brendan got it early.
Yeah.
And he realised, I do have to put the barriers up a little bit. Jürgen's just walked in and been himself from day one pretty much. And so if he thinks the picture's dry, he'll just say it. But it's just a throwaway comment to him. But like you said, like, everything gets magnified 100,000,000,000%.
There's a reason why no one's asked that Jürgen got his teeth done. Whereas Brendan Rodgers, it was like a massive talk of
points
of comment. Yeah,
Jürgen's or not?
Right. I want to talk about a couple of the performances in there, but I can't help but get this sense about this game, Steve. If Endo's goal goes in at the end, if a gun pings in off the underside of the crossbar and in, we're not giving this anything like the level of scrutiny that it's being currently
You're giving it the mentality monsters thing, aren't you? You know, Alex Ferguson's team get loads of credit, Man United of the 90s and 2000s, for scoring last minute winners. Mm-hmm. No one forgets for that. Why didn't you score another 89? Why did you have to leave that? Because you probably didn't play very well.
Yeah.
But you get the mentality monsters thing, and like I say, that is the game. It's inches. Like, there's, you know, another ref doesn't give that pen. Another ref gives the foul on Henderson in the build-up to the goal. This is not to say Liverpool weren't rubbish, because Liverpool were rubbish. I can't emphasise enough.
Yeah, and just to clarify, you know, they hit the post, and that actually does hit the inside of the post, and that's even closer to hitting the post than going in as well. So it works both ways.
Sometimes he has it as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly.
Sometimes you look's your luck, but this isn't... sometimes you get away with one and you go, got away. You know, like that, we've done that load. Liverpool have done that loads of times. I remember the Aston Villa game when it were 86 minutes and we were crap.
Yeah.
And then Robertson scores, then Mane scores. And it's like, oh, look how brilliant we are. We're going to win the league because there were the mentality monsters and stuff. They didn't play well, but they nearly got away with it. That again, it's just a fine margin. What I would say, Paul, is if that goal goes in, like it would be what you say, like not undeserved win, because you win with your win, but like, you know, Fulham would be like, I think,
look, for people who analyse and people care to analyse it, would still be going back and going, right, look, Liverpool didn't get out the blocks. But you get to analyse it from a position of, like, we dodged the bullet.
It's actually easier to do that because I think it's easier as a manager to be critical of your team when they've won, because you can say, that was crap. You can really have a bollocking at them because you don't have to worry about picking them up, because they're already up, because they've just scored the last minute winner. They're all buzzing. Rafa did this a lot. You know, they walk off the pitch and like they've just won. He'd be like, yeah, but you did that, and that. You can do that. Because this week now, Jürgen's got to, not only has he got to sort the tactics stuff out and what went wrong, and there was quite a bit that went wrong, and performances, and now there's injuries and illness. They're all feeling really low as well.
Yeah.
So that's a hard, it's hard to really bollock someone when you're trying to pick them up at the same time. You've almost got to like gently ease them up a little bit. Yeah. That if you won, you can just shout at them.
And that's
Do you think they're feeling low?
I think they will be feeling Like when I think they'll be feeling like they haven't played well, and I think that will. I don't think
not low how not, we feel low.
Yeah, not low
like,
as
like
yeah.
normal human beings yeah. feel yeah, low. Yeah, where yeah. we're sat in the corner eating ice cream with our hoods up, you know, watching.
Yeah, yeah. But I think if you ask a lot of them, they'll be down about how they played. I don't think yeah. the general. I don't think a draw away from home. I don't think they're gonna be like say they're not binge watching Netflix with Ben and Jerry's. But like, I think they'll be thinking, oh, you know what, they'd love to have a game tomorrow. Just to put it right, and the fact that the big massive gap doesn't, I think they will.
The fact that
it's ridiculous that the season starts and you haven't got a game for 9 days. Yeah,
yeah. But also, I don't think the City result helps. I don't think the fact that Tottenham started. And this is where I think psychologically we're different to elite athletes, believe it or not.
Speak for yourself.
Yeah, well, you know, the elite mentality runs in several ways, but not in this way. But no, we do take it more to heart, and we take it more to heart because it's not within our sphere of influence. And that's why we get more wound up by Liverpool defeats than probably the players do, because they know, well, I'm just going to work that hard and train, and someone's going to tell me a few different things to do, and then the next week I'm going to go and put it right, and I get to put it right actively myself. So I think the players will be fine with that, because they can deal with it. It's one game, and they'll just go, well, and this is the broader point on this, it's a draw. It's only a problem if you draw the next game and the next game and the next game.
Yeah.
You know, or if you run out of points that you can drop very early on. I mean, we had this in 2009, 2010. So we finished second to Manchester United, and then we lose more games in the first five of the next season than we'd lost the entire season previously. And then you know your title challenge is over.
Doesn't matter with Liverpool, though, because if Liverpool do that, they're going to win the Champions League.
Yeah, yeah, and that is the difference with this side compared to sides previously. Yeah. And that's why, we should all be more comforted, but we do naturally take it a bit more to heart than maybe these players.
I just think there's always like X amount of games, because City are so good as well. These two teams are phenomenal. There are X amount of games you can drop points in, and it's probably like five or six maybe in a season, and you fall away as your banker that you just, you know, that isn't going to be one of those six. So all I was saying the other day, what it means now is that in another game where a draw is a good result, you probably have to go and win. Now Liverpool are capable of doing it. Like,
yeah,
if you said before the start of the season you're going to go to the Etihad and draw, and Chelsea and draw, and Tottenham and draw, you're like, yeah, you know what, that's not too bad. Liverpool, it might just mean that they have to go and win one of those games now, which they are more than capable of doing.
Yeah.
It's just, I think what's causing the anxiety, and we're going to talk about it later, is that it isn't just the fact that there's the draw. I think it's the injury and the amount of players absent. I think when Jürgen said before the season, in his press conference the day before we went to Fulham, he says, we have got too many injuries. And I think when the manager does say that, everyone's like, fucking hell, we have got too many. We really have got too many. I mean, you're looking at your bench, and with all due respect to Sepp Vandenberg and to Stefan Bajcetic, I think that when people look and go, they're on our bench. And then you realise we've got a board over there, and all those players on the bottom are injured. And there's more on the bottom there than there is on the team almost, because there's that many. I think that's where the anxiety is coming from as well.
So can I just say it from an older supporter's point of view? Literally for me, I think because there's so much business involved in football, it is business now, of course. 100%. I just think Liverpool are doing absolutely fantastic, keeping up with Man City. So for me, I don't see no negatives. I really don't. I know modern-day fans were. Look, it is what it is. Man City can spend that level of money now. So if they get an injury now, they can go and pay 60 million, throw it there, whatever. Liverpool don't. The fact of it is they don't. It is what it is. The fact that we're keeping on their tails and where we are, everything's positive to me. I'm like, look what Liverpool are doing. It's unbelievable. Because I remember the 90s, no trophies for ages. After 2007, was it the FA Cup or whatever? Won about one League Cup in about 10 years. It was rubbish. Yeah. It was so crap that I'm looking at Liverpool and what they've done. And the whole rest of the league and country, and you've probably said this, should be thanking the world that Liverpool are there, giving some kind of challenge. Because otherwise, City's just, it's like some daft league, what they win every year.
I think the problem that people have with it, you know, to continue with the broad borderline metaphysical of it all, is that this feeling of like wasted years of your life.
Yeah.
And I think people have had a bit too much of that in the last couple of years. Okay. And the idea that you might feel like the season's somehow a write-off, and it's not, that's hyperbole and it's anxiety talking, but like this, everyone's got this fear, and the fact that we literally had a season on top of that when the injuries decimated what Liverpool were trying to do, that Jürgen Klopp's good. I think Jürgen Klopp signed the contract has helped. I think Salah signed the contract has helped. That should alleviate a bit of that. But this idea that you're only going to get so many years where we're actually able to compete at the top alongside Manchester City, and you don't want to run the risk of wasting any of them. But just to go back a point, Man City drew six games and lost three last season. And getting 93 points. by the way. And I think that gets forgotten. There's 9 games of football where City didn't take all 3 points. That's not a lot historically, because that's ridiculous. Like, because teams never broke 90 points. It just didn't happen. Now it happens quite a lot. But the fact is, you can still lose that many and still win the league. That's probably about the 5th or 6th highest ever points tally that a league's been.
It just means that you've got to make those points up somewhere else. That's what I've been saying for a while. Liverpool are going to lose games. They're going to lose games this season. They're going to draw games this season. It's what you class as a good draw and a bad draw. And now, further down the line, for example, last season, we went to Stamford Bridge just after Christmas, was it, or around the Christmas period, and we drew 2-2. That's a good result.
Yeah,
but at the time, we felt like it was the shittest result ever, because it meant City's gap had gone to XYZ. And in the end, it actually turned out it might have been, because we didn't win. But that's the point, is that you've got to go make these points up somewhere else. And there's a difference, right? And this is kind of what's getting on my nerves. Like, Liverpool were crap. Liverpool aren't crap. There's a difference.
Yes.
I have seen Liverpool... Crap Liverpool teams play crap.
Yeah.
I grew up with watching a lot of them.
Yeah.
This is a great Liverpool team who play crap. This manager and these players will sort this out. I would be shocked if they don't. Can they get to a level where they win this title? Yes, they definitely can. Will they? Who knows? I think people just are so, like you said before,
I think people have been conditioned to look for blame everywhere. And when things don't work, what's the reason why? And that's because what a football analysis is. That's all Match of the Day is. That's all the ex-pundits
are. Mate, Chris Kamara on fucking goals on Sunday, every single goal that was ever scored was someone else's fault.
Yeah.
I don't think he ever won. Every single goal was like, the defender could have been there, or why isn't...
You never get to say, it was just boss. That was just really good play from the attack. We do that too often, but actually we don't have that balance when we talk about Liverpool, because it's always our own fault and never someone else's.
That form goal, by the way.
And listen, it's your job to do it on here, but that's where over-analysis gets you.
Yeah.
You summed up everything before by saying Liverpool play crap, but Liverpool are not crap. That's it.
And we do it because people are fast forwarding to the end of the season and going,
yeah,
well, we lost the league by a point. What if that's the result?
It might be.
And
that's sad that you're going to enjoy the party.
Exactly that. And that's the point. And so you
know what I'm looking forward to? Like Stoke City in a League Cup in a night game away.
Yeah.
I love games like that. Yeah. No, it's cold in January.
Exactly. And that's the thing, and it's tough because we all feel this. Everyone feels acutely worse when Liverpool haven't won, and that's the curse of being a football fan.
Yeah.
But that's part and parcel of it. It's like you should be sign a contract when you start to support a football team, and it's like you're gonna get what we're gonna give you is this, but in return we demand this, and what we're gonna give you is you're gonna be giving up your happiness. you're gonna be bartering or gambling your happiness each and every week, twice a week, but in return. And it's only gambling, because you can't guarantee a title, and you can't guarantee any of this. We're going to offer you the chance of silverware, and that's the smallest percentage.
Yeah.
And then a slightly bigger percentage is a win.
Yeah.
And a bigger percentage is a goal. And then an even bigger percentage is a nice bit of skill in a football match. And bigger than that is like just a moment to get you off your seat. And that's like the quantifiable guarantees of being a fan of your football club. But in return, you're offering up basically being miserable for potentially 7 days.
Well, I'll just say something. It's a really good analogy. You know, what's the name going into the show tomorrow night? Jim Beglum.
Yeah.
Career got ended early, stuff like that. I said to him, and a lot of his story was about like how down he was, no one, his career got ended early by that Gary Stevens tackle, which was a naughty tackle. And he was saying he was down and down and down for years. And when I seen him, I said to him, you have to understand. And I meant it. I said, I will cut off my arm with a rusty axe, as long as there's a doctor ready with the stitches, to be in the 1986 FA Cup final team that done the double like you. So the high I got coming out of that game has hardly ever been bettered. Yeah. When we done the double against Everton 86, I literally come off the ground and I couldn't touch the floor. And I said to Jim, do you realise how I felt? So for just to play in that one game you played in, but that is the bar to football, the misery comes with it. But look, on a thing of 92 football clubs, where are we in terms of happiness?
Exactly. And again, it gets lost sometimes, isn't it? And some people are heartened by comparison. Like, that's the difference, fundamental difference in me and my wife. I'll go, well, you feel bad about this, but look at this. And she goes, doesn't matter to me. I take great heart from knowing that people are in better or worse situations than I am. And I've referred to it loads on Redmen over the years. I had a mate in uni who was a Stockport fan. And it was the day, I know, and it was the day we sold Robbie Fowler, and we met in this club, and I had a face to the floor, and he was like, what's up with you? And I went, we've just sold God. Absolutely devastated. And he went, mate, we've got Carlton Palmer as our manager. We're fucking shit. And I was like, oh yeah. And I had a boss night because, like, by comparison, I was like, oh fucking hell, you're like me. You've got no choice but to support your football club because it's something you were born with.
Yeah.
You never came, you just came, it was natural, you had no choice. You were with that football team for life, and you've basically got a percentage of misery is far greater increased because you're a Stockport fan compared to me being a Liverpool fan. And I feel sorry for you, but also, that makes me feel a little bit better.
Do you think, Paul, people, it's hard to, there's a line between criticising and just being like really miserable about it. I thought Liverpool were crap. Like, I honestly can't emphasise how bad they were. It was like that first half in Spain when me and you were in Villarreal, and it was like watching, it was like watching 11 lads who just found Liverpool kits and played footy. We were like, what is that? But that doesn't mean that then it has to consume to a point where it makes you miserable, angry all the time. Does that make sense?
I think people like to die on hills. I think people like that. I think some people like their misery and they like their anger and because they feel like it's theirs. It's like a possession. It's like a treasured possession.
Fill your boots.
No, exactly. But I don't feel I'm not like that, so I find it hard to relate to that.
I'm not like that as well. And the difficulty with social media is to decipher between the two, because you've got people who are just being miserable because they're miserable, and you get people who are moaning because of the Fulham game. It's hard to see who's who on social media. See, they all go together.
And comments live forever. And also not being able to get tone or intent. And then, of course, you end up blanketly presuming everyone is of a way.
Yeah.
So it's like presuming everyone who voted for Brexit was a racist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? As an example of it, which just couldn't be less the case.
Yeah.
But there were a lot of racists who voted for Brexit. But if you focus on them, it's easy to go, and then you end up with loads of people in entrenched situations because they're being chucked into camps that they didn't realise they actually agreed with, or shared values or views with people in that way. So it becomes a cesspit, basically, off the back of it. But the point is that it's not that way. One thing I want to mention, actually, which I thought summed it up, and I loathe it be to give a betting company particular credit, but the social media team of a betting company, the Paddy Power advert that came out last week where it had like the fan and he was explaining to, like, what it was like, the older fan explaining to, like, the management. And some of it was a bit on the nose, but you know, when you see stuff like there's guys the Exploding Heads who do like comedy sketches, which takes the piss out of talk sport. And there's a guy who does pitch meetings for movies, and when you watch something, you think, oh shit. I wish I'd come up with that. You know, the ideas are so simple, or someone's managed to boil it down into okay. But I thought that I've absolutely nailed how I feel about going on social media. There just feels like a lot of people, it feels, whether it's true or not, like a lot of real entitled minge bags who can't appreciate the good side because they feel like, I presume they feel like prognosticators, like they've seen through this all and they've seen this deep light. They've seen the future, and it's this problem. Unless this problem gets solved, like they've come. They feel like someone's come back in time and gone, lads. There's an apocalyptic future here unless we stop someone from doing this.
Yeah.
And but what they have, the inability to recognise that largely it's anxiety talking is the thing that.
I've only got a speech to my Sunderland mates. I've got a mate Sunderland fan. I mean, they've got 40,000 to 50,000 in and around their town. Absolute fanatics. The thing about them is they can all get in the ground as well.
Yeah.
Whereas we struggle because it's a worldwide support now. And the Sunderland fan and what he's been through in the last 10, 20 years. Come on, perspective.
You know what it is, mate? I think the main thing is right is that it's hard. And this is again, we've done a few deep conversations. This might be the same as that. We started early with
we're all gonna die.
We're all on the inexorable path to the black abyss of nothingness.
I've been having an existential crisis for the last 20 minutes.
But so let's enjoy the midfield performance. Jesus Christ.
There is an inability to accept that other people think the same as you or differently than you, rather. So, for example, I might think player X is good, crap. You might think player Y is brilliant. Yeah. And we can go, okay, sound. Yeah. Well, I don't have to fight you until I change your mind, and you don't have to fight me.
Yeah.
You and that's it. It can be politics. Like, there are members of my family who have voted for political things that I just can't get my head around. But then I still talk to them about it.
No.
Because why would I bother? Because he's never going to change me, or she's never going to change me, and I'm not going to change them. It's like everyone's going to be convinced that I'm right and you're wrong. Yeah. And it doesn't have
it's
to be.
It causes wars, though.
just agree to disagree. For example, I got it this weekend, and I might as well talk about it now. I got horrendous dick this weekend. To be honest, it was because of stuff you said. It wasn't even fucking me. You said something, and I was like, but I, Sarge, you don't agree with me? Absolutely fine. You do not have to think, you know, I thought, we had a bit of a row on the show. You thought Fabinho was worse than Henderson. I thought Henderson was worse than Fabinho. And then we walked out of here and we had a cup of coffee and went home. Yeah. Like, sound? Who cares? Like, who really? Yeah. There's a reluctance to agree to disagree at all times.
Because there's niche cults around everything, and you find people get an opinion and they get validation on social media by finding other couple of people who share that opinion.
Yeah.
But then that becomes their identity. Mm-hmm. It's like, if it's like people who...
And they cling onto it.
Well, yeah, but it's like, yeah, exactly. It's like people who, for whom their personality or identity is Xbox, or their personality or identity is Liverpool Football Club. You know, and I think that becomes harder. I think the more removed you are, and this is not unifiedly true about people being from Liverpool or not, but I think you have to double down on it the further away you are, because it's not as easy to connect with the football club. Mm-hmm. But if you've developed a group of mates, it's like you have it in school. You decide you like a type of music, but you've got to dress a certain type of way. If you come in the next day and you've not got... Everyone wears leather jackets and you come in wearing a denim jacket, then your mates are not going to talk to you because you're not like that. So you'd end up having to become more entrenched in a particular scene or way or thoughts or feelings or whatever. And we've had this over Jordan Henderson. We'll talk about this in the midfield chat a bit later on, but that's what's happening, is that you get a lot of people...
God, I'm sorry, I took the whole conversation to this place.
No, sorry.
This is the deepest LFC conversation I've ever been involved in.
I've been on Redmen public shows anyway. But no, but this is the problem with it all. It's hampering people's enjoyment. I do like it when people bite back. And I must admit, like I say, I got more enjoyment out of that Paddy Power advert than I thought the Everton one was brilliant as well. By the way, the guy he's getting treated because he's been so sad and miserable, and he's feeling better, and it turns out it's because he's not been watching Everton all summer, which is why he's feeling better. Great.
Just a quick one on that. What time you're away from home? I mean, I've lived away from home. No, I lived in Florida, and I remember the football pub everyone used to go to and to watch all the Premier League. I went worse. I was bad. I was like, in the end, every time there was a game on, all the people like Chelsea fans, Tottenham fans who came in, leave him alone in that corner, because I used to go, fuck off!
Yeah.
Leave me alone, get away, go on. Because I went worse.
Yeah, no, you have to.
I'm here, I'm not too bad, I'm cool here, but...
But it's true, but it's like, because you've got to be demonstrably what you support or what you feel, or whatever. You've got to amp it up a little bit, and I think...
Plus, David Talk an absolute shite.
Well,
that does help as well.
100%.
And then the last one is right, is that... There's an inability, I think, to agree that, like, not everyone's got like a hidden meaning behind what they're saying. Sometimes people, like, going back to the Jürgen conversation, sometimes he's just saying what he thinks.
Yeah.
Like, you're not saying, well, I you know, Thiago is injured now, therefore Liverpool need to sign in midfield. I know we're going to talk about it later. It doesn't mean like it's a hill to die on. You know what I mean? Like, there's nuance in all this kind of stuff. Like, sometimes people just talk, and because like people like talking, and I like talking, and you like talking, and you like talking, and that's sad. It doesn't mean I'm trying to convince you, or like I'm trying to swindle you into doing something, or you know what, I'm just going to say this because deep down inside I don't mean it, but I'm just trying to convey. It's like, it's nonsense. Like, just sometimes talk about footy's fun.
Yeah,
and we'll all agree and disagree.
The footy's meant to be fun. That's ultimately the point. And that's what I'm going to say about this, is that
it is a leisure activity.
No, exactly. But, you know, but unfortunately, we've been sold on it being more, because everyone loves all this, like, do or die, like the heroes.
This means more.
Exactly. You know, well, it is
more to know to a city like Liverpool.
Yeah.
It's part of people's lives and culture.
It is.
And certain football clubs and football fans don't get that. I mean, I've talked to other fans who support other clubs, and they think we take it too far.
Yeah.
But I say to them, you don't realise how much that football club is ingrained in people's lives.
100%. But what I mean by that, and I agree, like, football is a central part of the identity of the city and the people, and broaden that. And it can be as much or as little to you as you want. But what I mean is the win and the quest for the need to win and the need to win and all that kind of stuff, is that... I don't know why people were drawn to football, but I just love football. I love kicking a ball. I love that noise that a football makes when it pings off the woodwork and goes in. I love the sound. It's a bit romantic on it, like the ripple of the net. I love that.
Same.
I love the let off when it goes in. You know, I love that. Like, some of the best goals I've ever celebrated have not come in Liverpool wins. You know, I think back to Mohamed Salah, Tottenham Hotspur, we drew that game because they got a late penalty. That was probably one of the best let-offs I've had in a ground for watching a football game, and no one ever talks about it because we didn't win the football match. But they're the things that we're chasing. That's what it's all about. Right, we're going to take another short break. We had a super chat from Ashley Frith coming. He says, "Hey Redmen, not sure if you remember me proposing, but my wedding is this Saturday. Part of the honeymoon is going to the Reds, YNWA. Well, congratulations, mate. Good luck with everything. Make sure when you're doing your post speech that you thank your bride and anyone who's majorly contributed towards the wedding. A few tips from having been here. Always say how boss your bride is, and if a major family member who maybe you know has got a bit of a hair trigger, make sure you thank them profusely for whatever small role they played in the wedding." That's all the advice.
Speaking from experience, though.
Absolutely. Right, yeah, very, very short break from us, and then we're going to chat about Nicky's new play and the midfield situation for Liverpool.
It is fucking August. It's baking hot. I'm not filming this in July in the middle of a heat wave. And we've got an incredible club legend competition for you this August. It is a signed Rome 77 shirt, and it's signed by none other than the man, the myth, the legend, Phil Thompson. To be involved, if you're a club captain, go over to redmenplus.com and upgrade your subscription to Club Legend. If you're brand new to Redmen TV, then get over to redmenplus.com. Sign up as a club legend, you could win this incredible prize and other prizes that we give away for some reason every single month.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Yeah, we just have a little chat about how people have just got the wrong end of the stick in the comments over us using Sunderland as a comparison. We're not comparing Liverpool to Sunderland, we're comparing the happiness of fans comparatively, of course. Everyone is obsessed with their football club. Some people get more success for being fortunate enough to support a football club that's successful. Most people will have got that. For the few people who don't, I don't really know how to explain it.
The nuance of conversation can be lost sometimes, can't
it? Like we've written it in text form. We've literally said it in a moment.
Literally a man who writes things for a living.
If you want to get involved with that incredible competition we've got running at the moment, if you want to sign Phil Thompson, Liverpool, European Cup shirts, then you can. Join Redmen Plus, club legend here. It's amazing. Get involved.
It's a ridiculously good prize.
And we've had a few of these over the years where I'm really jealous that we don't get to put it on the wall, and that's one of them. We're going to chat about the midfield, but we've got Nicky Alton. Nicky, YNWA, let's talk about six, baby. It's back. Mm-hmm. Was it 2014? Around there, time? Because I remember it was just the incredible swell of optimism around the city at the time. Brendan Rodgers was the new messiah. And then we got to go to the Royal Court and sing some Liverpool songs, feel really upbeat around the football club. Why is it back? What was the motivation to bring it back to the stage?
The reason it's back is Jürgen Klopp, bottom line. And what happened was... it got called off because of COVID, like life itself did. So it was supposed to be back about 2.5 years ago now. So that's when it was coming back. It was to celebrate that win in Madrid, and Jurgen Klopp and stuff. And the show litter has just had a lot of stuff taken out, had new bits put back in. Liverpool, I have to say it with clarity, like Liverpool's story is such a dense story. It's had that much success, and the reason I compared it to Sunderland is because I know a Sunderland fan who's a fanatic like me, and his whole life's been misery, where my life's been pure joy.
Yeah,
virtually. So to write Liverpool's show, it's a case of what you take out. So you go through the history of it, and then you go, we're gonna have to leave that. We're gonna have to leave that. Like the very first show that you came to see, Paul, we had no League Cup wins in it. We left them all out. We just went sod the League Cup. It's the Mickey Mouse Cup.
Yeah.
So Liverpool's story is a case of taking everything out, not what you put in. There's loads. You could write three shows, literally write three shows. So what we did is we wrote it about people in the city, what it meant to them, and the reason it's back is because Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, I mean, I had such a good time with this, and it shouldn't be understated. I like theatre. I like musicals, and I remember us having this conversation after the last one of saying, it's a Liverpool musical, and you were like, I'd not thought of it. You're just thinking about telling the story of Liverpool.
Yeah.
But the musical side of things is so, again, it's so ingrained in the culture of the football club.
Yeah.
It's like an oral history, a musical history of the journeys that we've been on, and that's part of the celebration of it.
That's exactly what it is. And you know what? You did say that. I remember you saying it now. I remember me going, really? But it's even more music now. So maybe you had a bit of a say in that. But literally, you know, as I say to you, the reason the show's back is Jurgen Klopp. We've loved making the show this time because if I just say here, just for people who want to know, there was a Celtic supporter who wrote a book and it was called Celtic in Nine Lives. And I based the show on that, Liverpool's show, because what he did was he hung Celtic's history on nine individual characters. You can literally do Liverpool's like that. You can sort of go J.K. Holden, coming forward, you can go McKenna, then you can go sort of Elisha Scott, Billy Liddle. You come forward, you start going to the 60s, you go Shankly, and you can literally hang Liverpool's history on maybe 9 or 10 people. The thing is, the hardest thing with Liverpool is they won that much. Everyone's always going to say to you, you never mentioned that, yeah. You never mentioned this. And we are thinking now, if this comes back in 3 or 4 years, we're thinking of writing a whole new show. That's the point we've reached. Maybe the first act will be as it is, just tell it slightly differently. But Liverpool, its history is that dense, telling it in another way.
The thing is, for a, obviously, we talk about football, it's a leisurely pastime, but the problem is you can't escape the tragedy that's part of Liverpool's history as well. Mm. And what I like is the fact that, I mean, again, it's what makes for a compelling story, at the risk of not looking to denigrate the actual tragedies that sort of happen. But, and again, it's one of the things that draws people to Liverpool. What I love about it is that it doesn't pull its punches, but we're talking about a form of entertainment, so you can go and have a drink and enjoy with your family or your friends or whatever. But that's it. It all adds up, I think, to making Liverpool what it is. And the fact that you actually were able to come back now and have a modern era of this where there is added success, I think only speaks to what a wonderful story Liverpool Football Club is.
Well, you know what I could have done? We could have went, there's the first act, there's the interval, the whole second act's going to be Jurgen Klopp. We could have told a 45-minute story of from when he arrived and all the trophies since. We had to put all the dark bits in, your Heysels, your Hillsboroughs. But what's happened, what Klopp's actually done, two scenes have virtually gone out the show, which was the marches by the Union, the Spirit of Shankly, the Hicks and Gillette stuff. It's all gone. No one cares no more.
Yeah.
But you know when that show was first on, everybody cared about that because it was recent.
That's the bit I remember when I went and seen it. It was 14, was it?
Yeah.
That was the bit because it had just happened and we had these new Americans in and we were still a little bit unsure.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can replace that now, and I say, you can't even tell that. You couldn't even tell Jurgen's story in 45 minutes. You probably need the whole show for it. It's crazy. Like, it's 2015. Jurgen arrived.
Yeah.
7 years. And it's just like you again. Every single season's been a roller coaster. It has been crazy.
Yeah.
I just think it's crazy that this goes to show, like what Paul said before, and what you said, what we've all been saying, is like this footy club is just unique. It's completely different. Yeah. I've got a Man City mate, and he calls us like a cult, and he means it as an insult.
Yeah.
But I take it as like almost like a compliment. Yeah, it is because like yes, we've at the highest of highs to the lowest of lows. Like it doesn't get any lower than what we've been through, and yet we're all still here. It's like resilience. It's mad. If you'd have been asked to write a play that fiction. You would never make this up because it's too up and down. There's too much going on.
I'm
looking forward to going. Obviously, I know we're going back to you in a few weeks time. But the Jürgen stuff in itself has been like it's almost been Jürgen's 7 years have been like almost a microcosm of like all of Liverpool, and it, like we got lucky in Paris that it wasn't as low as it could have been because it really was that bad. But like in terms of a football team, the highest of highs to the low. Like we've had lows.
Yeah.
Jürgen's time encapsulates almost reflects Liverpool as a whole.
I think the thing that strikes me, and again, it's for people looking to people in the city will recognise this, and but maybe have not thought about it, or people from outside the city might not understand it. But because we've talked about this about how people can take it too seriously, and we're raised on, you know, like football's not a matter of life or death; it's more important than that, and this means more. And yet we've also had Liverpool fans go to football matches and not come home. You know what I mean? So things like that should trivialise comments like that, but equally we're going to sat here going, but does mean more to us? It's actually ingrained in who we are. It's an essential part of this city and our identity. But what I think what people forget, and it's not a uniquely Scouse trait, but you only find it in certain cities, particularly in England. And I always describe being Scouse is like meeting adversity head on. And in Liverpool sense, it's screaming, you'll never walk alone down its ear until it gives up, and then taking it for a pint afterwards. Mm-hmm. And that's that thing of like, you're challenging. There's lots of really sad things that would put you on your arse, but invariably you pick yourself up, you grab the people around you and you get on, you remember that life is short and you can still, in the face of this, you can still have a laugh and you can still get on with your life and still find an upbeat angle to approach things. And that's what I think stands out about the play, is that you can go to something, it's not a story, it talks about real tragedies, but you can still come out with a spring in your step, singing the songs and having a smile on your face. So yeah, I mean, obviously I implore people to go and check it out at the Royal Court.
No, thanks, Paul. It was a difficult thing to write that, because when we approached it, especially in rehearsals, the Hillsborough and the Heysel parts as well, it was like, whoa, where'd you go here? Going back to the spirit of what you talked about, and I hope it's in this play, maybe it's the fact that we're a poor city and people have come to the city in the last couple of hundred years, because it's not an old city. I mean, they say 1200, but literally the history of Liverpool is about 200 years, roughly. And it's mainly all people who've come from other places, you know, from Ireland, from Wales, from Scotland. I was only reading recently of all the great entrepreneurs who left Scotland to come and live in Liverpool, because Liverpool was a boom city where you went and made your money. And all these Scottish entrepreneurs did all kinds of stuff in Liverpool, which I always tend to go to the Irish thing because it's so big. So maybe we've carried that tradition on of having nothing, coming from nothing, and there's always a brighter day around the corner.
Yeah.
And without waxing lyrical and starting to sound all mystical about it, I think that's definitely in the nature of the people. It's a bit like somebody said to me one time, Liverpool people are the kinds of person who, they'll get ran over by a bus, and as they sat under the bus with the bus on top of them and half chopped in half, they'll make a joke.
Yeah.
Can't you just get this bus off your dickhead? It's that kind of thing.
Can't park here, lad.
Get on my leg. Whereas, you know, other people would just be screaming. They'd be like a thing on Casualty on the telly, just, or he's died. A Liverpool person will crack a joke in serious adversity.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's taken wrongly, but I think it's being able to laugh at yourself and not take things too seriously. So I think that with the newer fan base from around the world, I think that's sometimes where it often clashes with the older fan base and people who were like even 30s and 40s. Theirs is shut up, what are you on about? We've got this and we've got this.
And this is true, actually, and this is one thing I can, because this is one of the things I can only speak to people locally, is that the younger generation in Liverpool are not as hearty against that kind of stuff. They are more quickly embarrassed.
Yeah.
They're more concerned about appearance and how things will be perceived.
Because it's a global world, and it's like,
yeah, yeah. It was when
Haaland missed against us in the Charity Shield, and we were literally laughing at it on the show, and someone put a comment in the section saying, well, that's going to come back. Why are you doing that for? Because when he scores or Nunes misses, they're going to clip this up and use it against you. I was like, so what? Mm-hmm. Like, so what? Honestly, so what? Who cares? Like, honestly, I can laugh at myself all day long, and you should be able to. It's like that.
We sang, we're going to win the league after City in 2013-14 because we'd just beaten our title rivals. We were top of the league. Everything was going really well. And it was like a... it just happened. And that's the thing, I think people forget sometimes that things just come out.
Do you know how big Liverpool are? Do you know the day that happened? That show was on in the Gaiety in Dublin, and there was literally thousands of people walking through the streets of Dublin singing the same song.
Yeah.
That's how big Liverpool are.
Yeah.
And I was looking, going, oh my God, this is just across the water in a different city.
Yeah. And exactly, and you can't, you know, that's the point. There's like the collectivism, some shit just happens, and you've got to enjoy it in the moment. You can't worry too much about what comes off the back of it. So yeah, it's on the Royal Court now.
Yeah, it's on the whole of August. It ends, I think, the 3rd of September, which is Derby Day. Oof. So that can go like bum, bum, bum. So yeah, it's literally on the whole of August.
Yeah, we've waxed lyrical plenty, but I honestly think it deserves it. I've been saying to Steve for weeks, just saying, like, I want to get down there, I want to get some much stuff of it, because I had such a good time last time around. And we have a lot of opportunities when people say, well, you promote this, when you promote that. Like I would... Donald, yeah, I'd go to the nth degree to sell this to you guys, because if you love Liverpool, if you like a good night out, if you want a reason to get out the house and you want to celebrate the thing you're passionate, or if you want to know more about the club, or you want to feel closer to the spirit of the feeling in the city, honestly, book it, get yourself up to Liverpool for a night.
I know there's loads of hope. People will be travelling in for home games, won't they, over the next few weeks as well. Like, it's perfect. It is genuinely. Yeah. It's like you're looking for something the night before a game or the night of. Well,
I can't put it. There was a couple of things in that 13-14 season when it was last time on. You had like the Hillsborough Independent panel come out. There was a charity game around that time. I think it might have been the Gerard Carragher one at Anfield. And this was on, and Liverpool were going for the title, and like I genuinely walked out feeling like Liverpool were back, you know. And the thing is, we weren't at the time. We just had a little sniff of being back. Liverpool are genuinely back, so you get to enjoy it in like not in like a nostalgic way. Mm-hmm. Is you get to enjoy nostalgia, but also celebrate what's going on as well. So anyway, get to the Royal Court in Liverpool and check out YNWA. Let's talk about six, baby. Right, the midfield. So I went through this because obviously it's the big talking point around Liverpool at the moment. Liverpool's midfield options, first of all, this is the midfield that's on the books at Liverpool. Jordan Henderson, Fabinho, Thiago Alcantara, Naby Keita, Harvey Elliott, Curtis Jones, James Milner, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, and then there's a few on the fringe, potentially Fabio Carvalho and Stefan Bajetic. Talon Morton's gone out on loan. Leighton Clarkson, I think, in fact, he's gone to Aberdeen. He
scored a school
as well.
I held him,
yeah, he did. So I think you're looking at legitimately 8 to 9-ish midfielders who could legitimately play in Liverpool's midfield. Now, Thiago out for 6 weeks. Oxlade-Chamberlain out for 3 months. Keita's currently ill. No one really knows where that is, but you imagine that won't be too much longer. And Curtis Jones has got an undefined timeline on that. So there's, at the minute right now, there's 4 options been taken out of that, which leaves Henderson, Fabinho, Elliott, Milner, Carvalho.
I am a kid, yeah.
Bajetic. 5 to 6. I can't argue for utter clarity on this, Nicky. I would not turn Jude Bellingham down. I would not turn down a top quality midfielder. I would not, if Liverpool said, we are looking to sign someone, I would not be manning the barricades trying to stop that player coming into Liverpool Football Club in any way, shape or form. In fact, I would be openly welcoming these footballers.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't think there's a single Liverpool fan who doesn't feel share that sense.
Yeah.
But it is an awkward situation because I think there's upgradable members. I think there are players who can be upgraded upon quite clearly in that squad. And I think Oxlade-Chamberlain's the obvious one. Yeah. He's been at the club a while. Yeah. He's not at the heights. Yeah. And he's had some injury issues and he's currently injured. But I agree. Jürgen Klopp's also come out and said, we're not going to buy a midfielder for 6 weeks. We need to buy someone when we're going to have too many options if they all come fit. We want someone for the long term.
Mm.
I can appreciate that it's an awkward situation. It's not as cut and dry as just go and buy a footballer.
Yeah, and I do think it's a game of football. You can overanalyse today, and we all can, but I still think everybody... You can't kid the majority of Liverpool fans, and they all do want to sign a midfield player. Myself, personally, I just think they should just go and sign one. But what there seems to have been a history of in the last few years is we all know we can't spend at the City level. It's a business that's doing really, really well, the football club. So they obviously have got their way of doing things. But at this moment in time, it would cheer up the whole fan base and give the squad a lift, I think, if they just went out and bought an absolute class midfielder. And I don't... Listen, Jürgen Klopp knows better than me. But I don't see it being a problem when you've got a scouting system that's probably as big as Liverpool's and people around the world to go and find a player now who everybody just gets that lift from, who I think he does background checks, he's got to get on with people and da-da-da-da-da. Yeah. But we need a midfield player. We need to sign one now.
I can't believe that Liverpool have got certain standards, and I get that. And there's like, it's almost like a filter on a computer. Mm. You just tick out, is he a knobhead? Yes, well, we're not signing him.
Yeah.
How much money does he, whatever, all these things, age, all of it. I can't believe that when Liverpool put all their filters in, the only name left is Jude Bellingham.
Yeah.
I failed. That just can't be the case. There must be other footballers out there that you can go and find. My thing on the... I saw someone tweeted me yesterday, and again, it's gone back to social, but like, well, would you risk not signing Jude Bellingham next summer to sign player X this summer? And the argument is, well, no, because you signed both of them. Like, at this point, as it stands right now, Ox, Naby, Milner won't be Liverpool players because they literally won't have a contract. There's a chance that some of that changes, but as it stands, those three aren't. So, Jones, I think there's... Who knows where Curtis's future lies? Hendo will be older and we're unlikely to be playing every game anyway. Thiago, who, again, I mean, I love Thiago, but his inavailability is an issue, which the doubt is. So they kind of left it like Fabinho and Harvey Elliott and Carvalho going, well, those two are kids, who knows who they are, and there's Fab. So
Liverpool's got a peerless injury record.
Liverpool himself. Should have signed a midfielder in the summer. They just should have. We were oversubscribed on forwards last year when they just got Luis Diaz done because there was the chance to sign Luis Diaz. They got him and then they waited till next month to go to Taki and to Divock and even Sadio. See you later. We'll get one more in. So you can overstock on things. I think it would be remiss of them not to sign a field and now they should have done it anyway because all those players that we mentioned, you've just listed 10 lads there. How many don't have questions about them one way or the other? There's no...
Naby Keita has got a question still.
Of course he has. Everyone has. Yeah. The only one who hasn't is probably Fabinho, who, by the way, was fucking crap the other day. He's still brilliant, but like the rest of them have either got age, too old or too young, injury concerns, too old, whatever, too many, or just pure inconsistency, which is what Naby falls into, or Henderson falls into that. Henderson and Naby, they're all in that range. There's always something about them. It's hard not to peek over the garden fence sometimes and just look at Manchester and go, fucking hell, Bernardo Silva's just good all the time and always fit. And my God, Kevin.
Just to the point though, is he? I know we feel that way. Is that it's not peeking over the fence. Is that the grass is always green?
Maybe it is, and that's what I'm saying. But it's hard not, like you look at Kevin De Bruyne and there'll be City fans. I'm going back to mate earlier.
Gundogan's got all the same problems.
He'll just list about 20 things why Gundogan's the worst player in the world, but we're all getting envious of players. So
Calvin Phillips is the one. And not because I think he's good enough to play for Liverpool. He might be. I don't care enough about him to have a strong opinion on Calvin Phillips as a footballer.
He just went and got him because there was a need.
He's a footballer who's not going to play. He's not going to start every game for Man City, but they've just gone and bought an England international for a good chunk of change who effectively is going to replace Fernandinho, who's a backup option. He might play. He's going to play. He'll end up playing a couple of games at centre-half. He'll come in and he'll do what he did at the weekend when he comes in right at the end. Play a few minutes here and there. He'll keep Rodri fit and fresh. But that's the kind of player Liverpool don't seem to buy.
Yeah.
We don't seem to go and get the lads who's going to know he's a squad player because that's not how our side's constructed. And if you start buying lads like that at Liverpool, we run the risk of undermining, I fear, what we're doing. But the problem we've got is that, again, what we all need is to someone to come back from the future and tell us it's going to be all right. No one's ever going to be able to do that. When I don't freak out about this as much, is two things. A, I've been reading the comments on Liverpool social media and videos for 10, 12 years or whatever. So I see this every year. We have this exact conversation every year.
The Liverpool side that won the title had people just Bollock and Gini Wijnaldum.
One position we are perceived to be too short in.
Yeah, yeah.
And the problem is that one year we were, and that was the year when all the centre-halves got injured. That was the year where Virgil van Dijk got out for the season, Matip was out for the season, and Gomez was out for the season, and then Henderson ended up out for the season.
Fabinho got injured
as well.
We signed Kabak and then Davis
signed,
injured.
Yeah, we signed, and he got out for the season. You know, blah, blah, blah. And the problem is that vindicates the fear. To some extent, every single season we've had this. And last season, what was it? Anyone remember? It was the midfield, I'll tell you. It was the midfield. We were having this exact conversation a year ago, and all of the points were exactly the same.
Oh, at the beginning of the season,
this
yeah,
time last year, the exact conversation was Liverpool need to go and buy a midfielder.
Till the hunt for four trophies had all got forgotten, yeah. That's right, yeah.
And what we didn't, because what we didn't know at the time was that Harvey Elliott could play in midfield, but then, of course, Harvey Elliott then got injured three games into the season and missed the vast majority of it. But we, the only slight difference where I agree that maybe what happened at the weekend might shift our thinking, it's Thiago for 6 weeks, makes a big difference.
And they're all getting older.
Yes, yes, of course. They're all a year older, but also Jordan Henderson played more minutes and more games last season than he's ever played under Jürgen
Klopp. Which in itself is a worry. This might
yes and no, actually, but like, but people are questioning, people talk about his availability and people talk about that he's shown it's actually possible. People worried about like the centre halves, like it's just because someone always had these problems, we've actually shown weirdly that we can get more out of people in terms of minutes and availability. What I mean by the Thiago thing is this time last season, Henderson didn't start the season because he'd been to the Euros with England. Thiago didn't start the season because he'd been to the Euros with Spain, and he was carrying an injury, so we had to ease him into the season. And we had a couple of other. Naby Keita was still. Is Naby Keita going to be capable of adding anything to Liverpool? We had the same question marks.
Fab didn't start the first game, did he? Either?
Fab didn't start. Milner started at the start of the season because I think they'd had
Brazil due to Copa.
Can I just say something as well? Just to interject for a minute, is your problem that you've got is, you know, the side that started against Fulham, what we were talking about before, about if you don't start at a level, these players are all good footballers, and if they're going to start at Fulham's level, as in effort wise, these teams, Liverpool, with their crowd, with their passion, with their history, with them level of players at the Fulham level of effort, they're going to drag you through games. We could go on a 10 game run now with what we've got. But whether they're going to be able to play to them levels of every single game, everybody knows now, surely in South America and Europe somewhere, there's a brilliant young midfielder who's 21, 22, yeah. We can go and put 40, yeah. 50.
And also, yeah, Paul, like, the Thiago 6 games thing is that, so 6 weeks, it's actually loads of games, because September is full of games.
Yeah, exactly. So and that's what I mean.
It's nine games, which is almost the quarter. You're missing Thiago for essentially a quarter of the season. It's the...
True, it's mad when you say it like
it's
that.
It's crazy, but it's the what's happened, unfortunately, is that a lot of the questions about a lot of these players that we had are starting to come true after 1 week.
Yeah.
We all knew Thiago is likely to get a hamstring injury at some point. And that's the point.
And this is where I agree, and where what I'm doing here is I'm laying it out because there's a reality to this, is that we always have these fears. Yeah, and sometimes very rarely are the fears realised.
It was terrible last year. Yeah. And it got totally like rubbed away.
Totally, you know, and to the point where we had 3 or 4 really good lads who couldn't even get on the bench at the back end of last season because we had too many players, and that's what Liverpool will be wary of.
Yeah.
I would still contend, by the way, that in terms of depth, in terms of quality of depth, we've still got more depth than Manchester City this season.
They're just all injured at the minute.
But it's when will they be back? Mm-hmm. And can you cope until they get back? And when they come back, is that what's the damage done in terms of their fitness? Are they? Is that going to recur? Is that going to be a bigger problem? We saw last season having Diaz. We weren't meant to have Diaz. We had our hand forced into Diaz,
and it helped.
And also, we were meant to be. We tried to buy Carvalho in January as well, and we couldn't get over that over the line before the deadline day. Window shut, so we might have actually had even more extra players, and that benefited us in a big way. So we've seen the benefits of actually going maybe one more than we feel.
Can I just jump in very quick? The argument I've got is that actually, it's not for me. It isn't a depth thing. It's a go and buy someone who starts. I don't think it would be that hard at the moment to find someone who just walks into our midfield for whatever reason, whether it's.
I disagree.
We have different views on players.
Just take a breath on that a second. Do you think it would be easy to get somebody walks into Liverpool?
Not easy. I think there will be players out there who are available, yes. Yeah. I know for a fact it is.
But what I'm saying is, like, ease is a relative
term. Okay.
Because this is the point. I know Thiago's injured at the moment, but he's not. When he's fit, he plays because he's brilliant. Because there's very few footballers who are better than Thiago at what he does. I agree that right midfield slot is unstable because I don't know that Jordan can consistently put the levels down at that. On his day, short against Man City in the Community Shield, and some people disagreed, but he had a good game in that game, and he's had lots of really good games in that position. But we're leading more towards, I think, him and Fabinho in rotation for the six, which I think is absolutely fine. I think Harvey can be a transformative midfielder on that side, but then it's then Fabinho, Thiago, Harvey. Is anyone else as good? as that Carvalho might be. Yeah, that might be a transformative thing.
I think I'm kind of with Nicky here. There's a player out there somewhere who's better than Jordan Henderson, who stays fitter than Thiago, who is fitter than all, you know, he's just a level above them all, who stays fit all the time. I'm not saying he has to be, he doesn't have to be the most solid of midfielders, but there's certainly the Joel Matip of midfielders, who's a really good player.
You know who that midfielder was last season, and this is where everyone's heads fell off. Can you remember
saying? It went to shit.
Sal Niguez, he's a full international, played Champions League football, been playing in La Liga for all of his career at a really high level, playing for a good team in Atletico Madrid, and he went to Chelsea and did fuck all. Barely got a kick, and didn't improve them, and everyone was dead certain that he would be an improvement on what Liverpool
had. It was like we had to sign Werner, didn't he? Can I ask you a question?
Can I just throw back to you, and maybe to you as well, Nick, is that why do you think they didn't sign him in field in the summer? What do you think? Was it a case of they wanted these two, there was two lads and they couldn't get either of them, so they just signed? Do you think that's literally the only reason why they've done it?
I would surmise that maybe they've got something with Bellingham, like an agreement, whether it's a personal agreement, because it feels similar to Virgil van Dijk, this, to me, and we didn't realise at the time, but Konate too. And that's what I mean, we're coming back from the future, is in 2 or 3 years' time, when Jude Bellingham's the best midfielder on the planet for Liverpool Football Club, we'll laugh at this. We'll laugh at how wound up we got, because Liverpool goes on, and I know we're all living for the here and the now and the this season, the season in front of us. We don't want to feel like we're sacrificing a year of our lives for it, but we're existing in the past of that, of the Jude Bellingham Liverpool future, potentially. But the problem is we might not be. And this might be total mismanagement, because God knows we've seen that before. But Liverpool have, and again, this is why, what I'm saying, trying to say is I think Liverpool should buy a midfielder. I think Liverpool should go and buy a brilliant midfielder. But I've seen us get this right too many times for me to be, I'm not losing sleep over it, yeah, is what I'll say, because I've got a bit more longevity about it.
That's why I always stay positive, because they do always seem to get it right. They always pull it round.
I'm with you. Liverpool should have bought a midfielder. They should buy a midfielder. Is it the end of the world if they don't? I would say no.
But I will agree that the situation has been exacerbated massively because Thiago's not going to be, he's going to miss potentially miss nine games of football, and then how long, and then if he's missed that, does he then have little knock-ons throughout the season? Answer is probably yes.
That's why I'd sign a player, mate, because of the injuries.
I think he's too important to how we play.
We've actually made...
And the other injuries too. It's just that the level of injuries, players are older, you know, you're going to be playing a lot of games when the League Cup kicks in and all the Champions League kicks
also,
in.
Also, mate, like, Liverpool changed. They got rid of a player who played every single game but wasn't as good as Thiago. They brought in Thiago, who was, like, world-class, he's brilliant, but he's going to have missed like 40% of the games he could have played. Mm. Some of it's not on him. Richarlison broke his leg. There's nothing you can do about that. But some of it has been muscle stuff, which kind of, I think, you know, the biggest predictor of injury is previous injury. Like, you can't injure, stay injured kind of thing. So Liverpool transformed to get Thiago in the team. They changed a lot. They broke the mould. Liverpool don't sign players who are that old, really. And they don't spend that much money on them and give them that much wages. And they don't really get lads who have got the injury history that they've got. They gambled on Thiago. And when it works, it works brilliantly.
Yeah.
But at the moment, we've seen the plus side of Thiago. He helped us win two cups and we got close to winning everything. The negative side isn't, we're dealing
we
with the
negative.
We need
to be signing, because I think in Jude Bellingham we're signing the next Jordan Henderson, and people will scoff at that because they feel disrespectful to Jordan Henderson. What I mean is a guy who can play box to box, who's got great skill in small areas. He's got a much higher ceiling than Jordan Henderson. But what I mean by that is you're upgrading on Jordan Henderson with this next in line. Who's the next Thiago? Because if let's say Bellingham's the next Henderson in our plans, and you couldn't get him this summer, can you speed up the process to go and replace Thiago? We might have done that already, and Carvalho is a point, by the way, because Elliot might be that for Henderson and Carvalho might be that for Thiago, and it's then who else can you get to fill in? Again, these are all unknowns, but I would also qualify this with, and I know it's a bit of a boring answer, there's like PhDs working on this. You know what I mean? With like scientific models that I'm not, couldn't even.
Do you know what? I was thinking that. And you know, my way of looking at it, it's sometimes it's an old fashioned way. I think, no, around the world now, on this planet now, there's got to be a footballer like Bellingham or like a Gerrard playing in for Boca Juniors or someone. Surely we are looking at him and going, that kid's brilliant. He's 21. He's going to come here and tear the league up. Yeah. But then he comes here and you've seen him on the TV, he looks so good. And two or three games and you go, he's not that guy. great, is he?
We're not the Liverpool that we grew up on. No. You know, and certainly me, and certainly
this is why I don't often come on for that reason, honestly.
You look at the players that are being linked with, like, Newcastle and getting linked with, even like Spurs.
Man United.
But Anthony's been linked with Man United. That's the kind of player who 10 years ago we'd have been dead excited by, because he's coming from the Dutch league. He's played a bit of Champions League. You can watch a bit of him, but you don't know loads, but he looks quite exciting. Yeah. Like Leon Bailey's a good example. Like, you know, he's at Leverkusen, was turning up. He's at Villa, and he's obviously had tons of injury problems, but he looks a really good player. That's the kind of player you'd be like, oh, wow. And it wouldn't matter, because he'd come into Liverpool, and if he only scored 5 goals, he'd be a cult hero forever. Mm. You've got to be able to come in and score 50. If you're playing Liverpool's front three, you've got to score 15 to 20 goals to play Liverpool's front three. If you want to play Liverpool's midfield, you've got to be able to tackle like Fabinho. You've got to be able to have the engine of Jordan Henderson, and you've got to have the passing range of Thiago Alcantara.
James Milner.
But that's it.
You know, the players for me, and loads of people will disagree with me, I know they will. Honestly, I just think he, and the club will know better, and you said they've got PhDs working on it. I look at Trent Alexander. Now, if you drop into the centre of the midfield now in like that Fulham game, he's going to not give them an inch the way they're doing it that way. He can play all day. He can put Salah through all day. Sometimes, like, back for me, it just feels a little bit like he's still a little bit wasted because he's that good.
Again, and that's a random thing. Like, Calvin Ramsey could come good, and then Liverpool are forced to change their plan a little bit, you know, and maybe that frees up. I don't know. The point is, we can never know, and I agree that it doesn't solve the fears. And the fears would all be solved by Liverpool signing someone. They probably should do. What I'm saying is, they probably won't, so try not to get too wound up about it, because it doesn't impact. We've still got to turn up and support the team. Don't let it take the edge off supporting still the best Liverpool team we've ever seen in our lives because of transfer business. To the point, and the point I'm trying to make, the circumstances are not identical, but we had this exact conversation last summer, and Liverpool nearly won a quadruple. This year nearly did the impossible, and the midfield options are arguably, okay, not today because of a couple of injuries, but like Harvey Elliott is a year further on in his development, or the lads are a year further on in their understanding of being Liverpool footballers and all those kind of stuff. Don't let it get you down too much. But Liverpool, if you could just sign someone, that'd be great. The fact, again, it boils down to, they clearly wanted Tchouaméni, and the fact that doesn't get across the line, it's mad that they've then not gone and bought someone. But again, we were sat there when we didn't sign Virgil van Dijk, going, well, we clearly need a centre half because they've gone for van Dijk. Well, they can't get van Dijk. Go and buy someone. Just go and buy any. And I reference it, Stefan de Vrij was the one. Everyone's like, go and buy him. He's the other one linked. Just go and buy him centre half. Just go and buy him. And they were going, no, we've got good centre halves. We had Lovren and we had Matip and we had Gomez. And they were going, it takes a lot to be better than that. And we go, no, don't be daft. You can dead easily get another centre-half. And we waited, and we got the best centre-half you've probably ever played the game, because we waited. We did the same way in the January, and was going, we've got no centre-halves, go and buy a centre-half, and they didn't. They got Ozan Kabak alone, who ultimately was a bit crap, and they bought Ben Davies, who's not kicked the ball for us, because they knew they were getting Konate, and now we've got the 4 best centre-back options any football club's got on the planet, because they made sure they got the right one. They made waiting, and it was sound. Doesn't make us feel any better here and now.
There's also an element of what's name here. You know, a lot of younger people really, really badly want to win the league again. Now, Liverpool, you look at that Barcelona game and they won 4-0, and everybody before that game's thinking, okay, we're going out, but just go out with a little bit of something. Because the team that played that night had injuries and stuff, and we were down 3 and whatever. And then we hammered Barcelona. You can't do that over every single week. You can't do a Barcelona kind of thing. But me as an older fan, what I know at Liverpool is, if Liverpool end up third or fourth in the league, it won't be the end of the world, because we'll go out and we'll go and win a trophy. Yeah. We'll go and win. Yeah. We'll be in the Champions League final again, or we'll be in the semi-final.
And moreover, Nicky, it's now's not the time to write off Liverpool's potential chances of anything, because we're one game into the season. They've already lifted a piece of silverware that they haven't lifted before.
You never do that with Liverpool.
No,
never,
exactly that. It'll be, and one other, but my kind of final point on it ultimately, we've got 3 weeks left of the transfer window. If they do, amazing. Everyone will be made up. If they buy someone, that will ease our pressure immensely. If they don't, it's Liverpool Football Club. What will actually more likely happen is another hero will rise. someone else will rise to the challenge and make themselves a Liverpool hero, because that's what happens, and that's your Barcelona point, is that that was the moment where Jean Jacquery comes out of nowhere and sets up Gini Wijnaldum, and that's the moment where James Milner comes on at fullback. Exactly, you've got these random heroes crop up.
Yeah, that's football.
You know, the pressure will be turned to Harvey Elliott, and the pressure will turn to Fabio Carvalho, and it will turn to Curtis Jones.
Or Darwin Nunez.
Yeah, exactly.
Curtis Jones is the one more than anybody you'd love to see step up and become a brilliant player for us, because he's a local kid. Yeah. Everyone knows you've got all the skill in the world. You just want him to be that player, don't you?
I totally agree on that. But yeah, again, at the moment, I understand it feels a little bit up in the air. The obvious solution is to buy a footballer. But that's the thing. That's what we're privy to. We'd all do that. Let's just go and do that. But if not, it's not ultimately the end of the world. It's not. Callum Lee sent a super chat in where we were chatting from a conversation earlier. He said, when Jurgen Klopp makes excuses, he takes media criticism and pressure away from the lads. It works every time. He knows what he's doing. That's an interesting point. Just kind of back up
That's right. There's two ways of looking at it. He's either a genius or he's just dead honest. Probably both.
Yeah. Oh, no, definitely a bit of both. You know, he wears his heart on his sleeve, doesn't he? Right, thank you so much everyone who's joined us for the podcast this week. Do go and check out WA at the Royal Court for the rest of August. Whether you're looking, you know, and I know from my personal situation, I know Steve can relate to this, you know, some holidays, your kids are climbing all over you. Maybe, you know, hand them off for the night. You want a reason to get out the house. You know, well, this is on. It's only on for a few weeks. Go and get your tickets booked. It gives you a reason to go out. It's in the diary. You've got to go to mums and dads and babysitters. I've got this in the calendar. We've got these tickets. People will always be more forgiving of you when you've got plans set in stone. Go and check out. Have a boss night. Have a good old sing song. Get closer to your football club. And of course, support local creativity as well, which is always a very good thing indeed. Nicky, thanks so much for taking the time.
No, thank you. Coming up, brilliant. Brilliant place, this. Love it.
It's funny because me and Nicky have known each other quite a long time from me doing Redmen. But yeah, from back in the day of it being in the back room of my house, the first time you've been in the proper studios.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Well done for setting this up.
Funny journey we've all been on in this. Anathos, thank you so much to Steve. Thanks to all the people who said nice things to Steve this weekend, because the internet's full of beats. Right, we're going to be chatting a little bit about that. We're going to be doing Podcast Extra. Nicky's going to be stepping out to get on with his day. Ross is going to be joining us in the studio for Podcast Extra, which is all the stuff that we couldn't possibly broadcast on YouTube and put on podcasting services. The more X-rated version of the podcast, we had some of the weird, wilder stuff. And people always say to me, like, when are you going to bring the Machen Pajak podcast back? The closest thing to that podcast is Podcast Extra on Redmen Plus. So go over there, redmenplus.com, sign up and get our unbroadcastable Podcast Extra show in video and in your ears in podcast form. But other than that, thank you so much for joining us, for listening after the fact, and for all the people who joined us live on the podcast and commented, particularly to the ones who didn't get the whole Sunderland reference. It'll come to you. Ask someone for help to figure it out for you. You'll be fine. Gents, thank you so much, and we'll see you for another podcast next week. Get closer to Liverpool Football Club and the amazing city of Liverpool with Redmen Plus. More content for your eyes and ears, documentaries, extra bonus Redmen shows, podcast features, interviews. Get close to the culture of Liverpool Football Club on Redmen Plus.
Thank you so much for that. I hope you enjoyed it. If you want more Red Men in your ears, then consider signing up to redmenplus.com. You get everything that's on the website in video, and if you want it, in podcast form. From £5 a month, redmenplus.com, you get 2 free items of merchandise every single season. If you sign up as a club legend, you get 20% discount codes every single month, exclusive discounts from our partners, as well as your name in the credits and each and every Red Men Plus show.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.